KKB for radio check.
You're sounding great. This is KK4JBQ.
Yeah, I've been having some trouble with my TS-2000, and I didn't know if I was getting out or not. Thank you very much.
Doing more than getting out. You're sounding better than I've heard you sound in weeks. What did you do?
Not on my radio.
That probably means a lot of things. If you did a reset, I'm not entirely familiar with that. If you remember Rod, can't remember Rod's call sign. He had a TX-2002. It was... There was one that had a faceplate. Well, not a faceplate. The one where all the buttons were on the front. And then there was another where it was just... Maybe that was removable or something. I'm not that familiar with the radio. I do know it's a fine radio, though.
Let me switch mics and let me get back with you and you tell me how it sounds. Roger. Chicks Bay, you got a copy?
I copy.
Yeah, I switched over to my boom mic, and seems like everything's working, but I'm not getting normally when we modulate and you go off, it's got that little beep, 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 but it doesn't do it now. I don't know what's happening.
I'm not sure that you've got your boom mic wired exactly correct. Now, I know that can be a little tricky. I have a boom mic here, and I know to get that to work with my Yaesu, I just went to DX Engineering and got the right made-up cables. It's a bit tricky. But when I use that radio, I'm not using it right now, but when I use it and I use that mic, it's a little different because I don't have to squeeze a microphone. There's different ways of turning it on and off. Some people use a foot switch. Others, they have a hand switch that's similar to a microphone, but you're not actually holding the mic. It's just a on-off switch. Anyhow, I think your radio, not necessarily the boom mic, I believe that's not really working as it should. But otherwise, if you're just using the hand mic, you're sounding great. KK4JBQ.
XB, yeah, I'm using the boom mic with the foot pedal, and I switched over to my factory mic earlier. That's when I first called out a radio check, and I was just wanting to see if this boom mic was actually working like it's supposed to.
The boom mic right now, it's working as it's supposed to. And I know that's good to know. It's real unfortunate that as the hobby progressed, they didn't come up with some way to hear yourself, or that to be indicated in some way. But really, there's not. You have to ask somebody who's on the other side.
You know, the funny part about this radio is I'm listening to you modulating on HT, but it's not coming back on my radio. I'm talking to you on my radio with my TS-2000, but I can't hear you on it. I hear you on a handheld.
I suppose there's really no problem with that, since my signal could be heard by any number of radios. But is this the way you want it to operate, or would you like it to switch over to receive and my voice come out of your radio?
I've got the offset at 600, and I've got on my switch is minus 600.
Yeah. Well, there's supposed to be an offset. Yes, indeed. But that's for the repeater's sake. If we were speaking simplex, there would be no offset. And it'd be much like a telephone conversation. We could hear one another talk. Even when we were talking at the same time, we could hear one another talk. Simplex is a funny bird after you've been using repeaters for as long as we have. How are you making it there, Earl? We don't have long conversations anymore, and I can't know a lot because I can't even see you. You know what I'm saying? I can't even see you. So just tell me how you're doing.
Oh, Roger that. Yeah, I went in July 26 and had back surgery. They cut me 3 times. I got home, and 3 or 4 days later, they had to go back in and do back surgery again. Matter of fact, I just got out of the hospital last Saturday because I was in the bathroom taking a whiz, and my legs give out on me, and I fell in the shower and got busted up pretty good. So I stayed in the hospital about 3 days.
Okay, you made me wince there. Falling down in the shower. Golly. Well, I'm glad you're feeling good enough to have a little conversation with me. Ah, dear. Don't know what to say. I enjoy good health. And I guess I just keep my nose clean. You know what I'm saying? And I'm fortunate because I came with enough good luck, I guess. You know, when I came into this world, I came in with enough good luck to stay out of the hands of a doctor. So I was born at home. So the only time I was ever in a hospital is when I got an elbow to the throat during a football scrimmage. That was my last day playing football. My parents insisted on that. I think I was about 14 years old, so they had complete say over the matter. And otherwise, I don't know from doctors. I don't have one. I don't ever need one. I hope I leave this earth not having to have one. That could happen, you know, and it would please me very much. KK4JBQ.
KK4HXB, well, God bless you. I wish I could say that. It seems like over the past few years, it seems like every time I turn around, I'm in the hospital getting something cut on.
It's aggravating. I got to imagine that's more than aggravating. And it's something that's, you know, if you turn yourself over, and that's a real matter of trust. You know, you turn yourself over to do, and they put you to sleep, perhaps, and you wake up later. I've not even done that. Now, once I had to have an implant, a tooth, real bad matter there. The tooth got infected, and it kind of ruined that piece of my jawbone. So they had to cut out that bad piece of my jawbone, and put another piece of bone in there, and put an implant, you know, one of those things that you make a socket in the bone, and everything's titanium, you know, and then they make a tooth that's a whole lot like your original tooth. And they put that in there, and goodness gracious, it's better than an original tooth, so to speak. So what I'm talking about is a medical doctor. A dentist, not strictly a medical doctor, but you have to turn, so I do know what that's about, although I wouldn't let him put me to sleep. I wouldn't do that. I told him I wanted to be awake, and that was good. So he gave me this, gas that put me at ease, you might say. And so I had the good fortune of being able to communicate with him throughout the thing. It took about 2 hours to do the whole thing. And he did it in one stretch. And beads of sweat would pop out on his forehead, and I'd ask him, I'd say, "Hey, Doc." Well, he would ask me. He says, "Are you doing okay there?" And I says, "Well, Doc, I'm just here for the ride. The thing is, how are you doing?" Yeah, he thought that was funny. Anyhow, so I have had that little bit of inconvenience. But otherwise, it's just been optometrists because of my poor eyesight. And oh goodness, Earl, when I was a kid, I think the first thing I ever understood as an allowance was a dime. You know, that is 10 cents a week as an allowance. I think my parents did it because they just heard that other parents did it for their kids, and they had no other guidelines, and they didn't know what a kid would do with money anyway. But back then, a piece of bubble gum was a penny. And so I could get 10 pieces of bubble gum for that dime. And I was proud to have it. Well, it went up from a dime to a quarter. I guess it's the next logical denomination of coin, you know. So I went from a dime to a quarter. That's when I started buying model planes and cars and, you know, little plastic models you used to put together and paint and make all that fuss over. So anyway, the bubble gum, that really got me. This is back in the 50s, and I wasn't raised with a toothbrush in my hand, if you understand my meaning. And so I had plenty of cavities and plenty of business for a dentist. So a dentist and an optometrist, these are the medical people that I've had anything to do with. Fortunately, all the other major parts have held up pretty good. I'll be turning, this year I turned 74. Yeah, I think 74. KK4, JPQ.
KK4HXB, you remember the days when we were kids and we used to get on our bicycles and ride around the neighborhood in the woods and pick up soda bottles and go cash them in for 2 cents or whatever? You remember those days?
Another one for you. You go riding around and you picked up all the bottles already. Well, that's a good thing to do. And there are different denominations depending on, you know, the size of the bottle, I suppose, whether it be a nickel or some of them were a dime. But then there was this thing, promotion by the neighborhood movie theater in my small town. And if you brought in 25 bottle caps, we were just crazy to have bottle caps, you know. 25 bottle caps would get you free admission on a Saturday morning. And they'd play cartoons and stuff like that on a big theater screen, you know. That was a big deal back then. Oh, yeah, I remember. Done both of those things.
Now, we used to go to the Carolina Theater here in Greenville downtown, right across, right next door to where the Hyde is, and we could get into the movie theater for 6 bottle caps.
Bottle caps. Well, that's good. I don't think they ever did anything with bottle caps. It was free, but they just wanted to have you do something for it, you know. But I had this real neat thing going for me. My grandfather on my mother's side, he had a general store, dry goods mostly. But in that store, he had this cold drink cooler, and it was different than any other I'd seen. This was a big chest, about twice the size of any other I'd ever seen before, and it was full of water. And what it was is that the bottles were in I think a drink was a nickel at the time, and so you put your nickel in the thing, and you lift up the opening like a picnic chest, you know. You pick the top up, and you'd reach in there, and you'd have to fish that bottle out, and you'd take the nearest one. It was all just one kind. If it was loaded up with Pepsis or loaded up with Royal Crown Colas or Knee High, that was another one. It was whatever he had. You know, this is my grandfather, so I just loved that. And I asked him once, I said, "Papa, can I have all the bottle caps?" Because when people would take one of those things out of there, they would open it with an opener on the side of the chest. And it dropped down into, I mean, it was a nice, big, long container that it was attached to. So I says, "Can I have these bottle caps?" So I would dump these bottle caps into a bag that he also gave me a bag. And there must have been 100 bottle caps. So I don't know how many times to the theater I did on that visit to my papaw's cold drink cooler. Oh, boy. I haven't thought of that in years, Earl. KK4JBQ.
KK4HX. But yeah, I remember those. Do you remember the ones that the stand-up Coca-Cola machines that you put your quarter in and you turn that lever? It looked like a shovel head, and you turn that lever and it dropped the Coke down in its little container.
Yeah, I think those might have been newer, but they were, you know, these things lasted a long time. Sort of like refrigerators of that era, you know. I think the first refrigerator I was ever aware of, that thing lasted 30 years or more. Fancier, so much nicer, even connected to the internet, if that's what you're sweet on. But these things last for about 6 years and they're done, you know. Not economical to repair, I've heard some people say. Well, that's just no good. That's just going backward. As far as the consumer knows, is concerned, you know, that's going backward. Yeah, those were good days, Earl. And I understand now that you have these memories too. We are fortunate to have these memories. It's much more than we can relate to one another in a, you know, 10-minute conversation. And these are memories that we've carried around, you and me, we've carried them all our lives. And other people are not so fortunate. And, you know, they've got their own memories and they've got their own, you know, whatever he gave them. But I feel fortunate to have mine. KK4JBQ.
KK4HX. Bay, do you ever remember watching the movie American Graffiti?
I can't remember the actors so much, but I remember the movie, sure.
60s and 70s and the early part of the 80s, downtown Greenville was four lanes, and it was like that movie American Graffiti. Everybody on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday cruised Main Street, and it was like just like the movie American Graffiti. And we used to go up there every weekend. Me and my buddies would go up there. We started out with the vans, the cars, the hot rods, and moved on. But it was nostalgic, and, you know, I miss those days.
Yeah, my hometown was a lot like that, too. We had a main street. It was actually called Broad Street. And it was about three, maybe four times as wide as your regular main street in a town. It was wide, and so it was two lanes, but it had what do they call it, that angle parking on both sides, and then the sidewalk, and then the buildings. So the name was appropriate. It was a very broad street, but it was on a weekend night, mostly Saturdays, of course, maybe Fridays and Saturdays. The kids who had driver's licenses, this was long before I had any licenses, I learned about Broad Street, but they would cruise Broad Street. The city that I grew up in had some places call them turnabouts, we call them circles. It was an island at the end of the street where the main street, Broad Street, had two of these, one at one end and one at the other end. And in both cases, other streets came into that street. So you have traffic. You could go to one end and enter the circle, and you had three streets, I believe, on each one of these. No, four. Four streets that you could then exit from. You went into the circle, and you exited when you wanted to, you know. But I don't know. It amazes me sitting here now that even worked for people. But it did, and it worked right, you know. It did the job. The only traffic control was, you know, a sensible driver. Truly, there was no lights. There was no double lanes or anything like that. Well, so you just have to anticipate leaving the circle. And I had, of course, when I started driving, I could not anticipate, as I came to be able to do. But in the beginning, I just stayed in that circle and kept going around and around until I felt brave enough to exit when my street came up, you know. Because if you got four streets running into this circle, you've got four ways to go. And an inexperienced driver would have to take a leap of faith that they could just get out of that go-around at the appropriate time. Never had a problem. One night I was coming home from working at a restaurant. I think this restaurant was my second job. And I had worked 16 hours that day, double shift. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was headed home. I was not in any condition to drive. I didn't have any beverage of any kind. Mind you, I was just exhausted. And I let myself drift off just a little bit as I was approaching the circle. And don't you know that the car just went up right through the middle of that thing and on to the next road. I just ran right through it. 2 a.m. Fortunately, there was not another car on the road. I hadn't thought of that in a while. KK4 JBQ.
Yeah, I can remember some crazy stuff that we done growing up. We got into drag racing, and me and my buddy, bless his heart, he passed away a few years back. We had a little 65 Mustang. We dropped the ball 302 in it, and nobody downtown could touch us. We went undefeated for 2 or 3 years.
My goodness, Earl. It's great to recall. Too bad that you can't just step out of this time and step into that, you know? Even if you couldn't be there, you're there in spirit, so to speak. But you see things that you didn't see before, you know? And you could be on the lookout for things that you didn't know to be aware of. That's daydreaming, though, you know? That's just not a possibility. But, boy, wouldn't it be nice to know what you know now, back then. Yeah, I recall my first girlfriend, and I don't know how many, maybe our third date or something like that, and I was taking her to the movies, and we parked by the library on Broad Street, and there was this angled parking, you know, so you'd drive on to Broad Street and find yourself a parking place. It was there by the library, I believe. So we walked down the streets. You know, a nice small town. We went to the movie theater. We came back, got in the car. I turned it on. I put it in reverse, and I pushed the pedal a little bit. and I leaned back, you know, because I wasn't that good at using my rear view mirrors to back up, especially with other cars. I was backing into traffic, you know, so I just had to be aware. Put my foot on the pedal, and nothing happened. Like, nothing happened. Well, the engine ran fine. It started fine. I put it in reverse, just like always, but I could not back up. The car would not move. Now, this was a fairly new girlfriend, and I had one of those conversations with her dad. Her dad's nickname was Bear, and it said all you need to know about this guy. He was like five times my size, and big and wide, and fists that would absolutely, you know, put a hole in you if he swung it. Well, he said, you have my daughter home before the clock strikes 11. Whenever you two are out. And this is the only thing you'll ever have a problem with me about, but you will have a problem if you bring her home after 11. Well, we got out of the movie, along about 10:25, I think. Now, she didn't live far away, but this car was not going to move. So I got out and got underneath the car. I was carrying a flashlight. It was, at night, so I needed a flashlight. And I found the linkage to the automatic transmission. You know, it was on the column, you know. The water pin, and you're familiar with what that is. So, goodness, I didn't have one on me, you know. So I get back in the car, and I explain best I can to my date, who just got glassy-eyed. She didn't like the fact that we weren't moving, and she didn't like the fact that I got out of the car and left her in there alone, and she didn't like the fact that I got underneath the car and started looking around with my flashlight. Okay. But so I told her what I needed to tell her, I figured. And then I asked her, I says, are you wearing body pins? She says, yeah, I'm wearing body pins. Is that okay with you? I says, I'm not angry with you about body pins. I'm just wanting one of them if I can borrow one, please. So she gave me one of her body pins. I went back out, crawled underneath the car, and put this body pin in there to connect the linkage, you know. I used it kind of like a wire, kind of like the cotter pin, but not a good replacement for a cotter pin. Anyhow, when I sold the car, I had forgotten to actually put a proper cotter pin in there. I sold that car with that bobby pin in the gear linkage. KK4JBQ.
Hey, that's kind of hilarious. That sounds like some stuff I'd have done back when I was growing up.
Sweetheart, and I got her home that night before 11 because of the bobby pin. But there was one night that I didn't. She and her girlfriend, oh goodness, I forget her name. Anyway, we sort of palled around together everywhere me and my girlfriend went. Her girlfriend wanted to come along too. Now, her girlfriend didn't have a boyfriend, so I sort of stood in for both of them, you know. And it was fun to have, you know, they cracked up and we were just having a good time, you know. And this was back when $2 worth of gas was about as much as I could afford to put in the car at one time. $2 worth of gas, I don't know how much that was, maybe 4 gallons or 6 gallons, I don't know. It was back when gasoline was affordable. Anyhow, if you only put $2 worth of gas in the car at a time, I don't care how good your gas mileage is or what kind of driving you do, it will soon strike you straight upside the head, as they say, that your car has run out of gas and you're stranded. And this happened. And I remember, I'm with the girl that's got to be home by 11 o'clock. So it was turning dark, and I was in a place that I didn't know. I was, you know, taking them on a drive, going places that I'd never been. And I don't have a good sense of direction, don't you know? And this is long before GPS has come on, long before that. Well, I'm out of gas. And so we're now on foot. Looking for some place with a telephone. Because nobody has a telephone, you know, on them. Not in those days. So we stopped at a house. I was able to call. All I wanted to do was call her dad and just tell her dad what the issue was. And he sounded so disturbed about the fact that his daughter might not be home before 11 o'clock. You know, I don't actually remember. It could have been real bad. Because I don't actually remember, cannot bring to mind the end of this story. I can't remember it. I've told this to a couple of people since then. I can never come up with what happened. I remember running out of gas. I know we finally got back. I don't know. I don't remember carrying a... you know, you could tell this story a lot of ways. If you remember the right way, it would be one of, you know, it would be that you found the gasoline station and they loaned you the can, or they took a $5 deposit on $2 worth of gas, you know, and you got the can back to them and you got it home before 11 o'clock. But I don't remember how that turned out. Earl, could it be that I'm forgetting for a good reason? AK4JBQ.
Yeah, you remember the days where I was cutting grass in the neighborhood, and the cheapest that I ever bought gas for was like 26 cents a gallon. That was back in the 60s.
Yeah. Well, we can sit here and talk about prices of things forever. I do remember one thing that's a little unique. My dad would often talk. This is something that you and I are, you know, dabbling in right now. This is something that a lot of people, over time, they get into talking about what a gallon of gas used to cost, what a pack of cigarettes used to cost, and it's just a, you know, just common things, you know. What a Royal Crown Cola would cost. And if you had a Royal Crown Cola and a moon pie, which was, you know, a standard thing back in the country I grew up in, Royal Crown Cola and a moon pie. Well, if that cost you more than a dime, you were paying too much, you know. And you paid different prices around, but you never paid more than a dime. You'd walk away if those two things cost more than a dime. Oh, yeah. So, anyway, those days are so long gone. So long gone. It's kind of disturbing. It's disturbing, really, to have a memory that's that long. You know, it goes back to a time when you could actually live on what they pay a person to work all day. You wouldn't have to take out a loan every once in a while to keep on eating. But there came a time when I did have I had to impose on my friends to stay alive, to keep on eating. It was kind of tough from time to time, kind of. And I hope it wasn't ever that way for you, but it was kind of a struggle for a while. And here I am, long past the productive years of employment. And actually, retirement is a fine place to be, and I do not have any worries, thank goodness. I know I'm fortunate. And a lot of people never get here. They never have a comfortable retirement. But thankfully, I do. And I Well, anyhow, it's enough about that. KK4JBQ.
Yeah, you remember the days to where you could go in your little neighborhood store. You know, every neighborhood had a little store in it. Go in there and get three Mary Janes for a penny. You remember Mary Janes?
Sure. I tell you, though, one thing that I remember will never forget, and I've mentioned this to several people. On my way, this is elementary school, and I had two ways to get to school. One way was about 4 miles, and the other way was about 6.5 miles. 6.5 miles took you the scenic route. You know, you walk down some paved roads, but then you had to break off the paved roads, and you had to go across country. You had to go through fields with bulls in them. You had to climb up and down hills that were just way too slippery when it rained, and cross creeks on rocks. But if you went the other way, not cross country, mind you, but always stayed on the roads. Now, this is before any driving took place. This was elementary school. And you just walked on the roads. This was about 6 miles. And there were two. One was you left the school, and then when you got to go to one store on your way home, and to the right, turn to the right, and you go by another store. So I'd always gone by this one store. And then somebody who lived up that way, it was shorter for them to walk the other way. So we started walking home with them, just a group of two or three people. That's who the we is I'm talking about. It's just good to have somebody to talk to on the way home. It's going to take you a half hour, 40 minutes to get home. Anyhow, this new person joined us and said, let's go this way because, you know, you can keep on going. It's a little longer for you maybe, but you can keep on going, and it's my way home. So how about walking with me today? We did that. Walked by this store that I had not been in before. And don't you know that one of the things they had that the other store did not have was sugar cookies. And I'm talking a sugar cookie that's about, 7 inches across. A big old cookie. And it was a dime. That was a lot. You could get 3 cookies at the other store, but they weren't quite so big. And I don't know what they put in these cookies. They made them right there, I think. I don't know what they put into these cookies, but it was the finest tasting cookie. It was the most enjoyable cookie. I remember the taste of that cookie even today. Sugar cookie, they called it. Sprinkles with big old crystals of sugar. And I don't know what it wasn't really vanilla so much as it was a combination of flavors that was terribly good in a cookie. And the cookie was crispy enough to go crack when you first bit it. It would go crack, but then about 3 chews into it, it would melt into your mouth. I mean, it was an extraordinary cookie. Now, honestly, Earl, eating that cookie, and I must have had maybe 3 or 4 of them over time. But the memory of that cookie has hung on with me for about 65 years. So I got to say now, that was an extraordinary cookie. KK4JBQ.
JXB, I remember those days. Yeah, I remember. You know, you'd get out of school, the first thing you'd do is pull your shoes off and go hit the creek, because I had to cross the creek to get home. And I'd walk through the woods and go play in the creek. We'd build dams and make swimming holes and build forts. You don't see kids doing that anymore.
But, no, you don't. And I had to cross a creek, too. You know, after a while, after actually your first couple of crossings, you know, I had to cross, second. What's the, well, over the stream. You know, I had to cross over the stream, and you, I remember the first time I walked and encountered this thing. I walked up this way and walked back again, going up a little further. Kind of gave up. I wanted to figure out if I could get across without getting wet, you know. And I did find, let's see, what is that? Oh, dear. I did find some rocks that I thought would be, just from the looks of them, I thought they would support me. And so that's the first day I got wet. Because you don't, if you're not smart enough just to stand there and wait for somebody else to cross, and there's your way right there. Not something you think of yourself. You follow somebody else. Well, the first day I got wet. The second day I'd forgotten which one of those rocks. It was about four of them, I guess, that you had to, four solid ones that you had to cross, had to step on to get across without getting wet. So the third day, and this was something I had to cross every day. The third day, I found the rocks, and I never got wet again. Until a real stormy rainfall. I mean, stormy enough to wash small fish into that creek. I'd never seen fish in that creek before. But there was, you know, a lot of rain, and I don't know what was further up the stream. But I actually found a small fish. I guess the thing was maybe 4 or 5 inches, tip to tail, you know, mouth to tail, maybe a 5-inch fish. But the stream was was twice its size, and no rocks, no rocks to get across. So we just had to wade into the water. That's just what you had to do. Now, that meant that you got wet. You didn't come prepared for that. You got wet. And when you got to school, you had to take your shoes and socks off. KK4JBQ. 4JBQ, have I put you to sleep, Earl?
Negative. I don't know what happened to my radio.
Well, if you pushed the button, it didn't come out this end.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you fine.
What's wrong with this TS-2000? I'm talking to you on 610, but I'm hearing you on my HT.
Well, yeah, I can see how that, I don't know why that would have to be. Do you have to have two radios to make this conversation work?
This radio, this TS-2000, is locking down on me. I don't know what the problem with it is, but it's shutting off when I modulate.
Well, maybe you need to do some more investigating to figure that out. It's not a... It's not a simple thing that goes on when you push down the button and when you release the button. It's not a simple thing. Think back to the days when transmitter and receiver were in two cabinets, a transmitter cabinet, a receiver cabinet. And before there was an easy switch, like there is currently a switch to go from transmit to receive, just releasing the button causes that to happen on this hand mic that I'm using, and on your mic, same thing, I suppose. But you know, the day was that in the past that everybody had two boxes there, and one of them a transmitter, one of them a receiver, and you had to close off one and open up the other, you know, whenever you were in a QSO. Now, the TX-2000 is much more than that. It's all in one box, and it takes care of that is not magic, but is not a simple circuit either. So that's what's failing on you. I wouldn't know how to tell you to start. But investigate at least what might be mechanical. That's not too difficult. Investigate a mechanical cause first. You might find that might be a relay, in other words. But it's still going to involve taking the covers off the thing. You might be comfortable with that. They might not. Fine radio, though. It's worth the repair if that's what it needs. Give it what it needs. KK4, JPQ.
KK4, HXB. Yeah, I'm thinking about taking and boxing it up and sending it to somebody that works on radios. Do you know anybody that does good jobs?
Do not. But that doesn't mean anything. People who have been in this hobby even a shorter period of time than I have had issues, and that they might have a recommendation for you. But I'd ask folks that, those that come to mind might be KI4DOS, Gary, or Dave. Dave would be another one, the net manager. Dave Watson. Can't remember the call sign. Anyhow, folks who've been around a while, not that you and I haven't been around a while, but they were here before us. they would know if somebody is good on a Kenwood. At the fine radio, it's a lot of people like them, and they wish there were more of them that they could afford. They want two or three of them, maybe for parts, I don't know. But anyhow, I'm going to do us both a favor. It's after midnight, so we're out of net mode. Don't want to time this thing out, and you're having troubles with yours anyway, so I'm going to take this opportunity to jump into the sack and get myself some good rest. I hope you do the same, Earl. It's good talking with you. And I hope to do this again sometime. This is KK4JBQ. I'll be clear with you. 7-3.